Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everyone. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, December 18th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for the Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital Medical Group. 24 locations across the greater Saratoga region providing inpatient and outpatient health care to their community. SaratogaHospital.org to learn more. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday is Dr. Lindy Davis of Albany Medical Center, a surgical oncologist. Dr. Davis specializes in skin cancer, but can also speak to abdominal and colon cancers. We always get a lot of calls, and we certainly will today on this program, so get yours in early. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Davis, your calls, much more, all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. We got a great show today. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Lindy Davis of Albany Medical Center, a surgical oncologist. Dr. Davis specializes in skin cancer, but can also speak to abdominal and colon cancers, a former clinical research fellow at the National Cancer Institute. She earned her medical degree from SUNY Upstate Medical University and completed a fellowship at the Roswell Park Cancer Institute in Buffalo. Dr. Davis, welcome to Medical Monday.
Great. Thank you for having me.
How could you have done all of that at such a young age? It's a lot of, you did a lot of stuff.
Well, it's a lot of years. You know, it's funny because I just started my first job at Albany Medical Center, but I've been a MD for 9 years.
Wow. So. Wow, that's very impressive. The number to call, ladies and gentlemen, and I know we've got two on the phone already. I know it's going to go fast. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. I know that you are married to a skin doctor, and I know that you specialize in this. This is one of the rarest. Go try to find somebody when you have skin disease. Is that just my impression, or is that the case?
There's a shortage of dermatologists for sure, and it is hard to get an appointment. But it's important to have skin checks, complete skin checks, especially if you are at a higher risk of having a melanoma or some sort of skin cancer.
And what is the risk of having a melanoma?
So it depends on the person. People who have fair skin, red hair, blue eyes, people who might have had family history of melanoma or any sort of skin cancers, and also sun exposure. If you've had a lot of sunburns in your life early on, tanning bed use, then you're at a higher risk.
So if you're a beach person, I grew up on Fire Island, you know, and you were out on the beach playing volleyball every day, you know, 10 hours a day, you'd be at a higher risk, right?
That's right.
Which is good, because my brother and I, we sat on our porch and read the Hardy Boys while all the other guys went out and did that. But yes, those are the kinds of things you have to look for. Number to call, again, ladies and gentlemen, is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or if you have to, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So anyway, and Lindy, I guess the first question I want to ask you is, I know that you take a look at this. Can you tell people what to look for on their bodies?
You know, you look to see if there's any suspicious moles, things that might not have been there that have suddenly appeared, anything that might be bleeding or have an ulcer or a spot that's very dark that didn't used to be. So you want to get a good sense of where you are now and then see if anything's changed.
And we always hear about irregular, you know, stuff around the edges. Is that right?
That's right. So you hear the acronym, because that way it's easy to think of the A, B, C, D, E. You know, if the lesion's asymmetrical, meaning it's not a perfect circle. The border, if they're irregular borders, you look for the color if it's very dark. But also, you know, some melanomas don't have pigmentation, or they won't appear dark. So it's also good to have, you know, if you have any suspicious lesion or anything that's new, to have someone look at it.
Should your general practitioner, considering the absence of enough dermatologists, should your general practitioner be able to spot these things?
Well, it depends on their level of experience, you know, and everyone's different. People might have had more, certain practitioners might have had more experience with skin checks over others. So it really depends on their level of experience. But if they're not sure, they can always get you in with a dermatologist who could take a look too.
That's the way in, huh? Your general practitioner is generally has a little bit more access than mere mortal human beings.
Again, it depends on the person, but they also might have the capability of doing a biopsy.
Okay, let's start with Jim from Matamoros. Okay, Jim, welcome back to the show. What you got?
What about the metastasis of a malignant tumor after the primary lesion has been removed? Is it more likely to spread rapidly?
You know, Jim, can you repeat that question? I'm not quite understanding.
So in other words, okay, so you get the original lesion, you get rid of it, but it's already metastasized, and I think what he's saying is he's questioning whether the metastasis of a tumor after the primary spot has been removed, that certainly can happen, right?
Certainly can, but the thing is, that's a pretty general question. The thing about cancer is that all cancers act in different ways.
Yes.
Different biology for a colon cancer compared to a stomach cancer compared to a melanoma. So to answer that question, well, I think we'd have to talk about a specific type of tumor.
No, oh, good. Thank you, Jim. Telephone number is 1-800-348-2551. And over to Mary in Wilbraham. Okay, Mary in Wilbraham, how you doing?
Hi, thank you for taking my call,
sure.
Both of you. I'm a melanoma patient up at Dana-Farber. I've had two melanomas, and right now I have circulating tumor cells, but no solid tumors that I'm aware of. And I have two masses that they've found recently, one in my breast and one in my ovary. And my first question is, can breast and ovary be related to melanoma? And my second question is, at what size would you remove those? They're about 2 centimeters now. Can you let that go to about 5 centimeters before you biopsy?
That's an interesting question. You know, melanoma can do, can act in funny ways. First,
okay.
How long have you had the disease and what stage were you at at diagnosis?
I was at stage 2. I was originally diagnosed in 2004. I had a second one in 2006. And then a couple years ago, we found that I had circulating tumor cells. So they're trying to be aggressive about monitoring me, but I haven't developed any other masses.
Doctor, can you tell us a little bit about this idea of circulating tumor cells?
Mm-hmm. And that's something that's more experimental. So I don't know if you're on some sort of clinical trial at Dana-Farber.
Yes,
that's looking
at
these.
Yep.
Because that's not part of the standard surveillance for
patients with
melanoma. They might be microscopic tumor cells, single cells that are in your blood.
Yes.
And the thing is, we don't really know what to make of them.
Really?
At this point, because some tumor cells might be in your blood, but they never learn to get out of your blood into your body and to form a metastasis. But other ones, it might be a sign that you do have cancer, metastatic cancer. But we don't know what to make of it because some people have them and they never turn out to be anything.
So, Mary, what is your doctor saying about that?
Well, I go in every 3 months and I get my blood redrawn and, you know, the cells are still there. I haven't developed any other large masses, but I have these now two centimeter masses, one in my breast and one in my ovary. And so we're serially observing them, but I'm wondering at what point would I get them out, maybe at 5 centimeters? I'm just not sure what the threshold is to biopsy.
Dr. Davis, what I can't understand is what is a centimeter? I always ask the questions which everybody thinks but doesn't know. How big is a centimeter?
So that would be a little less than an inch.
So about your fingernail, something like that?
Right, or a little bigger than your fingernail.
Huh.
And it's something, like you're saying, Mary, you want to follow the time course. Questions to ask, was it there in the past? You know, if it's something that you've had all your life and it's just a finding we're picking up because we're getting these images, you find a lot of things when you do scans for cancer. You find a lot of benign things, too. But it sounds as though these are new, they haven't seen them in the past.
Since the last scan.
Yeah. And there are ways to look at these without removing the entire thing. You can get a biopsy with a needle biopsy. And that would give you the answer without having to have surgery to remove an ovarian or a breast mass.
But they can be related, is what you're saying.
They can be. You know, melanoma typically spreads to the liver, small bowel, brain, lungs, but can do funny things and can spread to other sites as well.
Mary, thanks for the call. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Jerry in Fonda, New York. Folks, after Jerry, the way is clear. Okay, Jerry, you're on.
Good afternoon. I want to touch on something Alan mentioned, the difficulty in finding a dermatologist. There's so few of them around. And I'm guessing that is because there are so few residencies in dermatology, and that kind of makes the dermatologists few and far between. But why do you think that is? Why do you think that the number of dermatology residencies seems to be controlled?
That's a good question. You know, to have a training program, you have to have residents have to meet certain requirements. So all of this is regulated, not just for dermatology, but for any program. So each school has to have a certain number of patients that a resident can see in order to be qualified. So it might be limited by the number of academic centers that offer these programs.
But I think in the case of Albany Med, a great institution, I think it took years before they really got going on this.
Right, and there is no dermatology program at Albany Medical Center right
there
now.
There is not, yeah.
No, so some areas are saturated with dermatologists. Other areas, like Albany, are in need of dermatologists. Mm.
Jerry, that's the best we can do. Thank you. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from New York Oncology Hematology, wishing WAMC listeners a joyous holiday season. NewYorkOncology.com. Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital. Wishing WAMC listeners happy holidays. ACTSURG.com. The Arkell Museum at Canna Jhaeri, presenting the Art of New York annual juried art show through January 3rd, celebrating New York's regional artists. ArkellMuseum.org for details. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. And from The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee, BlackSheepDeli.com.
Doc, back with Dr. Lindy Davis of Albany Medical Center, a surgical oncologist. Dr. Davis specializes in skin cancer, but if you want to, she'll talk to you about abdominal and abdominal and colon cancers. Okay, so we'll be, right, Joe. So it's great to have a coach on staff here. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So I'll ask you colon cancer. You know, I have a relative who had colon cancer, and they cut it out. He didn't have to go in for anything else. No extra chemotherapy or anything like that. Is that something you've seen before?
Sure. That can happen quite a bit. With screening colonoscopies, we're catching colon cancers early. Before they've turned into a bigger cancer. So for stage one colon cancer, chemotherapy is not indicated. Surgery would be potentially curative. For most stage two cancers, unless there's any high-risk features, surgery alone followed by surveillance.
We'll go to Mary in Wilton. Not the same Mary, is it? No. Oh, no. Okay, Mary in Wilton. Okay, you're on, Mary.
Hi, my dad was diagnosed with Merkel cell cancer, and he was actually treated at Roswell, and we were wondering, is it hereditary?
Merkel cell, now that's an interesting cancer. This is one that we're hearing more and more about. It's a skin cancer similar to melanoma, but has higher rates of recurrence. So Merkel cell, what we're finding, is more common in older people who have some sort of immunosuppression. They might have things like diabetes or something that makes them immunosuppressed. Older patients, it actually is also virally mediated. So there's a couple, and you can never rule out that it might be hereditary. There's so few Merkel cell cancers. We haven't come up with a link there quite yet.
So, Dr. Davis, can you take a look at a patient's skin and say, you've got Merkel cell, or do you have to have it, you know, tested in the lab?
Merkel cells look very different, and so usually you diagnose them on biopsy.
What does it look like?
Well, they each look different, that's something that more the dermatologist will biopsy it and then send the patient to me after the diagnosis.
Any follow-up, Mary?
No, but the dermatologist did find it, and then they sent them up, and then they sent them to Roswell because it was, they said, a rare skin cancer, and that's why they sent them to Roswell.
Did he die of that, Mary?
Actually, when he was at Roswell, they did full body scans, and he had stage 4 lung cancer.
Oh, boy.
Oh, okay.
They treated him for the Merkel cell. He had growths on the top of his head, and they kept coming out. And he had radiation and all that done at Roswell. But because of his age, you know, the doctors let him make the decision on the treatments and that. He was 85 years old.
Mm-hmm. So. And he had lung cancer at the same time?
Yeah, we didn't know the lung cancer. When he went to Roswell and they did the full body scan, that's when we found out he had stage 4 lung cancer.
Was he a smoker, Mary?
He had quit 50 years earlier.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, Mary, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Right. Have a nice day.
Yep, you too. Okay, so everybody, here's what. There is nobody on the board right now. I can't understand it. We have extraordinary talent here. You've got questions. I know you're going to ask them, and I know you're going to wait till the end to ask them. That is just not smart because you won't get in at the end. So if you want to do it, the telephone number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So I notice in your vitae here, we're talking about abdominal cancers. What is an abdominal cancer? What site?
Well, it depends. So surgical oncologists are trained in pretty broad training. So intra-abdominal could be things like stomach, liver, pancreas, small bowel, colon cancer, adrenal glands.
Okay, so pancreas is the one that's on everybody's mind because it kills a lot of people because we don't recognize it till too late.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do we find ways of finding it earlier?
That's the great question. You know, that's the question everyone would like to answer. It's just a hard cancer to screen for. We don't have good tests to screen for it.
Well, but I see that Judge Ginsburg on the Supreme Court, she had it, she survived, and it's years later.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do, some people don't.
It's remarkable. There are some long-term survivors after surgery.
And you do something called the Whipple procedure. What's that?
Mm-hmm. Whipple procedure is, it's a big surgery. It's the pancreas sits in a high real estate area. You know, it's near a lot of the big blood vessels that carry blood from the heart to the small bowel, liver, a lot of organs there that are sitting in an area that you need to preserve blood flow to those organs, like the liver and the duodenum, which is the first part of the small bowel.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to remove that part of the pancreas, but it's intimately associated with all those other organs and shares a blood supply.
Yeah. So what do? You cut off part of it?
So the Whipple is removing a portion of the pancreas, the head of the pancreas, and by doing so, you have to reattach everything that you've removed. The pancreas,
I
you
see.
Remove part of the duodenum, then you have to reattach the bile duct, the stomach.
So, doctor, how long does that take you to do?
It depends. You know, it depends on what you're doing it for and if there's cancer, if the patient's had radiation, if there's a lot of scar tissue, or if you're doing it for a precancerous lesion, it might be a quicker surgery.
Okay. So what happened there? We're not on the phone with anybody right now, I don't think. Okay, let's go to Donna in Woodstock. All right, Donna, you're on.
Hi. I was wondering how accurate is the stool sample test that they advertise on TV? You know, you see the little cartoon truck pulling away.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your opinion?
So That's to look for any blood that might be in your stool that could be from a cancer, but it also could be other from other things. You know, it's not as good as actually having a look at the lining itself. But some people prefer to start with the stool sample tests. And if there's a finding on those, then go ahead with the colonoscopy.
So similar to when your doctor ever handed you a little envelope for the occult blood.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it really is.
Exactly. It's looking for occult blood. And you can have false negatives and false positives, too.
You smear a little bit on the thing, and then they can tell you send it in. Mm-hmm. Okay.
What about the CEA?
That's an interesting question, too. Because CEA is a protein that's secreted by colon cancer. And so I think you're asking if you can look for that in your blood. But we haven't proven that that's a good way to screen quite yet, because there are cancers that don't secrete CEA. And even colon cancer, so not all of them do. And you might also be catching it later on in the disease process rather than early.
Well, I know I have a friend who had colon cancer, and, you know, they were always looking for the CEA and monitoring it. And,
once you've established that you have it. Mm-hmm. Once you've established, then it's Donna, good to follow.
Believe it or not, Donna, there are a lot of people behind you now.
Sorry.
Thank you. No, don't be sorry. Thanks for the very good call. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go to Wilma in Hyde Park. Okay, Wilma, there you are. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I had a question. My husband actually died of colon cancer, but this has nothing to do with that. But I have a friend who said she has a bruise under her toenail. I haven't seen it. And we read online that something like it could be a melanoma. How common is that? I mean, if you were to see a bruise under your toenail.
Right, so that's exactly what you want to watch out for. It could or it may not be a melanoma. Things that you want to know, did you have any trauma to the foot? A lot of people don't remember that they did or might not have had any
trauma.
Well,
that's it. She doesn't remember stubbing it or anything like that. Because I'm saying, well, you probably just, you know, banged it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people have funguses, don't they, that create that condition?
But I think you're talking about something that's pigmented, it's like a bruise.
Yeah, like a little black spot, like a black, black spot.
So,
I haven't seen it.
Things to watch out for: if it stays in the same place and it doesn't seem to grow out with your toenail, then that is something you should take a look at.
Interesting. Okay, Wilma, thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. And we're going to go to Deborah in Kingston. Deborah in Kingston, you're on. Go ahead, Deborah.
Hi, how are you? I'm calling because my daughter has a mole on her upper lip that she's had her whole life. It looked like a beauty spot for a long time, and then over the last couple of years it's gotten darker and it's continued to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, this happens, you can have it removed, and I'm like, it just doesn't seem like it's really okay. And I'm wondering if it's something that, you know, is typical of that particular position.
So the upper lip does get sun exposure. You know, so that is an area that would be a higher likelihood of having some sort of cancer. But I think, you know, it depends on if you've noticed that it has changed, then you should see a specialist to have a look at it.
Okay. Deborah? I think we may have lost Deborah. Sorry. Okay. Let's go to Fran in Utica. Fran in Utica, you're on.
Yeah, good question for the doctor. Can the cancer show up on other parts of the body that are not normally exposed to the sun?
It can, believe it or not. Melanoma can occur on all parts of the body. You know, you're at high risk of sun-exposed areas, but then different subtypes of melanoma can pop up on other parts of the body that aren't exposed to sun.
You can get them in the mouth, can't you?
Ocular melanomas, you can get them in the eye. Anal canal melanomas. So there's quite a few. Those are places that don't get sun.
I love the show. Always gives me something to worry about. anything else on this, Fran?
No, that's all I needed. Thanks very much.
Thanks,
great
Fran.
Program.
Yeah, thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we'll go to Rick in West Brookfieldville. Okay, Rick, you're on.
How are you doing today, Alan? Dr. Davis, how are you?
Good, thank you.
All right, thank you. A couple of quick questions. Recently, within the past year, I had a colonoscopy. No evidence found of any problem or anything else like that. I'm 61.
Mm-hmm.
How often is it a necessity for you to have a colonoscopy for number one? Okay, and then we can get to my next question, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is the next question? Go ahead.
Well, the next question, quite quickly, is that having to do with a skin infection, okay, on the inside of the ankle that has reoccurred. It was treated once before. I don't know what it was diagnosed as, but I was given an antibiotic for it, and I was treating it with bacitracin and keeping it bandaged for a couple of days and then clean it up again and bandage it again. And, you know, slowly it's a small area, and it's about an inch and a quarter round at the ankle bone itself, right where it is. And it looks abrasive, you know, like an abrasive wound, but it's not abrasion. It's actually some sort of a skin infection that has been diagnosed before, but it's now reappeared. So, you know, cephalexin is what's been prescribed for me, and I'm dealing with that regimen. And what would you think your prognosis might be for something like this?
Okay, so first let's do the first let's do the colonoscopy question.
Sure, thank you.
At what age do you do this?
And Rick, that's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up because. For people that are average risk for colon cancer, so people that don't have any other medical problems, probably don't have colon cancer in the family, you want to start your screening at age 50, okay, with a colonoscopy.
And when do you want to stop? I mean, I want to go, but my doctor won't do it anymore. I'm so old, he says, okay, we don't do that anymore.
Well, you weigh the risks and benefits of doing the procedure. If you find something, is it something that you would act on, that you could tolerate a surgery?
How come we don't do older people anymore? Or do what is the risk for older people? The tissue gets thinner or something like
that? Well, the risk of cancer is the same, but the question is, you know, if you're doing a screening test, why are you doing it and what's the outcome going to be? So if you find a cancer, is the patient healthy enough to tolerate a surgery and treatment for the cancer? But also, colonoscopies, we're looking for very tiny polyps that turn into cancer and that take 10 years to turn into cancer.
Okay, so you've had them. So, your chances of that having grown into a cancer in 5 years or 4 years.
So it depends. If you're 90 and you have other medical problems.
Gotcha. Okay, now to point two.
Excuse me for a moment. But so at the age of 60, having it done recently within the past year, I'm 61 now. So then my regimen from this point forward, when's next screening I should possibly have?
Mm-hmm. So the important thing to know about.
Nothing was found.
That's the important thing to know. If you have a completely clean colonoscopy, we generally say wait 10 years.
Wow.
When you have in between your screening. But when we do find polyps, we might do shorter intervals, 3 to 5 years.
Okay, so next on his ankle.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting question. That's something that I think I'd have to know a lot more about you and medical history to tell you if that's an infection or, you know, it could be blood flow.
I'm not prone to infections, so to speak. But this, I thought when it first presented, I thought it was maybe an abrasive, you know, type of situation from the inside of a boot. But it doesn't happen on the other foot. And it's
different
in
boot.
The same location. Mm-hmm. Pardon?
Different boot.
I use different boots.
No, I'm saying different boot on the other foot. You said it doesn't happen on the other foot. Okay, hey, listen,
no,
Rick, the doctor is right. You're going to have to go to a dermatologist and get it examined so that they can see it. Thank you very much. All right, 1-800-348-2551. We're now all going to go all the way to Scott in Albany. Scott in Albany, thanks for holding on. Your turn.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. My mom had melanoma when she was in her early 40s, and I've always called it a level 5, and she corrects me that it was, I call it stage 5, and she's corrected me that it was a level 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about, you know, she did survive that, this in her 70s now, but I'm wondering, you know, what kind of screening I should look at. I had a benign tumor removed from my lungs earlier this year, so I don't know if there's anything that prompts with screening too. Mm-hmm.
Hard to say if that's related or not, but if you have a family member with melanoma, you are at a higher risk. And melanoma also does funny things. It can come back years later, 20 years later. So things that your mom should do is keep an eye on the primary site, the site where she had the initial tumor, and check it for any skin changes, any pigmentation or dark areas, any nodules, and also any signs that the cancer has gone anywhere else, any unexplained pulmonary symptoms, new migraines, new abdominal pain, that sort of thing.
Thank you so much. We'll go to, we can try to fit one in here. Jean in Utica. We'll have to go fast on this one. Go ahead.
Yes, Dr. Davis. I have had a lot of sun exposure in my life. I'm in my late 60s, and I've had precancerous cells on my nose that have been frozen off or removed. My question is there a medication, I've heard about this, that can be applied that removes any other precancerous cells that might be there in the skin?
Mm-hmm. And that's probably a better question for a dermatologist to answer. But I think the good thing is you got to keep getting screened and make sure to catch any of those precancer lesions before they turn into a cancer. But in terms of the topical lotions or things that you can use, I mean, that's a better question for your dermatologist.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And can the cells spread to your lips? Can you get cancer on your lips?
I don't know if it would actually be the cells spreading or if it would be a new area that develops.
I see.
Thanks, Jean. Okay, we are going to have to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Ellis Medicine Bariatric Care Center, working to treat the individual patient and focusing on their weight loss needs and goals. ellismedicine.org/weightloss. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. State Street Fruit Store, Deli Wines and Spirits, downtown Northampton, a locally owned, community-minded grocery and specialty food store since 1922. Wine tastings every Friday, 4 to 7. StateStreetFruit.com. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. And from Dr. Richard Holub with Neurological Associates of Albany, conducting Alzheimer's research for over 25 years, currently conducting a research study for those with mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. 518-426-0575 for information.
Okay, so we're coming around the curve here. This is the last third of the program. Get them while they're hot. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Trying to get everybody in. Let's go to Letitia in Greenwich. Okay. Letitia, your turn.
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi.
I am calling about sebaceous cysts. In my lifetime, I've had several of them. Mm-hmm. And I currently have two locations where I believe it's a sebaceous cyst because it doesn't get worse, except maybe gradually does. But I've been told that I shouldn't have them removed because they will leave a scar, and they're in prominent locations. One's on my chest and one's on my face. So I'm wondering if technology has improved over the years and maybe it's possible to excise them without leaving a scar.
No, a sebaceous cyst.
And also, how can you be, if I may add one thing, and also how can you be sure that it's not cancer if it's not biopsied?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that might be on physical exam if it's soft. And you might see an area that has been draining, so you have an idea that it is a cyst rather than an actual nodule.
And Lindy, what is it called?
A sebaceous cyst or an epidermoid cyst. It's an accumulation of protein and things underneath the skin that can't get out, similar to a pimple. But with those, you need to excise the whole cavity so that they don't continue to accumulate that material. So no, you do need to have a scar, to remove all of that.
And again, just because I'm a little slow, what's the reason to remove it?
For symptoms. You know, sometimes they get infected. Sometimes people don't like if they get too big.
Right.
So it's really based on the patient's symptoms.
Leticia, you want back?
Yes, I'm here.
Do you want to ask another question or not?
Well, just how can we be sure, just by looking at it without any, biopsy, how can you be sure that it's not cancer?
Well, you could have it removed, and if you find that it is just all protein and sebaceous cyst contents, then it's very unlikely
to be
cancer.
They send it to the lab.
If there's a solid component to it, then you would. But if it's a true cyst, you wouldn't see any solid component.
Thank you, Leticia. Okay, let's go to, she's been on for a long time, Barbara in Ballston Lake. Barbara in Ballston Lake, you're on.
Okay, fine. I know that in introducing you that you're not specializing perhaps in breast cancer, but you certainly have every information. And my question is, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I'm not exactly a young person here. So I went ahead with a biopsy, and it showed, and I went with surgery and then radiation. And my latest thing is that I'm hormone receptive. So there seems to be a lot of information on taking tamoxifen or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if in the knowledge, I'm hearing more and more that they're suggesting in the therapy or the information that they're getting that they're skipping radiation, going directly to hormone therapy. Is that customary, and is it customary to have to go to hormone therapy if you have the radiation? Mm-hmm.
So those are very good questions. And generally, the hormonal therapy, based on the type of tumor that you had and the size of it and if the lymph nodes were positive or negative, but generally the hormonal therapy can decrease the risk that this cancer comes back or that you develop a new cancer. In a different part of the breast or on the other breast.
What is hormonal therapy?
So hormonal therapy is some breast cancer can secrete estrogens and sure. have receptors, estrogen receptors, progesterone receptors, and the hormonal therapy goes and blocks those receptors so that the cancer loses its signal to grow.
Right. So it involves, I'm sorry for being so dumb about this, but it involves estrogen.
So the medications would be anti-estrogen,
mm-hmm. right. And so there was a big debate years and years and years ago of breast cancer, whether people should be taking medications or birth control with estrogen mm-hmm. in it. Have we resolved that?
Well, it's always weighing the risks and benefits of the therapies that you choose. And the new, exactly with radiation, you know, we're trying to think, we give people radiation that can cause other cancers, that can cause side effects, skin toxicity. What's the benefit that we're getting from radiation?
Right.
We're constantly looking at that.
Are fewer women taking estrogen and birth control now? You don't know. I mean, that's okay.
Yeah.
After radiation, then they determine whether, even though you are determined to be hormone receptive, they determine that you go one route or the other for hormone therapy, or is it a given quite often?
It depends if you have the hormone receptors. And right now we're trying to see, you know, 5 years, we know that 5 years benefit. Well, what about 10 years? Does that give us extra benefit? So there's always new studies looking.
That's kind of, you know, As I said, do you realize how old I am? And I'm not telling, but it's...
Why aren't you telling? You're anonymous.
I'm sorry?
Why aren't you telling? You're anonymous. We don't know who you are. You know, okay, fine. But it's always another piece of information. Thank you, Barbara. Appreciate it very much. Okay. Let's go to, been on for a long time now, Ruth in Albany. Okay, Ruth.
Hello.
Hi, Ruth.
Hi. I'm questioning the use of shark cartilage for, I know it has been used in Canada for pancreatic cancer and GI cancers to interrupt the blood supply. And I know that there's also a concern about depleting the supply of sharks if they're using this. Is this being used at all? There's no side effects with it. Can you tell me anything about that?
Yeah, you know, Ruth, I don't know much about that. I'd have to look that up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I'm not familiar with using shark. Was this a supplement?
It's a medication, and I'm not sure how it's given, whether it's through the blood, you know. I'm not sure whether it's, but a shark cartilage is something you can purchase now.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wondered how it was used medically for.
Yeah, there's always the search to see, you know, what can we do to reduce our risk, but I'm not familiar with any studies out there.
I do know that in Canada, when it was used, and this was a number of years ago, for pancreatic cancer, it really, the person survived for about 5 to 10 years. Again, no side effects, and I don't know the details about it.
Okay, so, Ruth.
Okay.
Thank you. You gave us some homework to do.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye. And now we're going to go to Bill in Amherst, who's really been on the phone for a long time. Hey, Bill, thanks for holding on.
Yeah, thank you. I have a question for the doctor about psoriasis and skin cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 78 years of age, and 3 years ago I was diagnosed with psoriasis and have been taking Otezla medication for it since. Is there a relationship between psoriasis and skin cancer?
You know, I'm not quite sure of a direct relationship between the two, but there are some treatments for psoriasis, which would be actually a UV exposure, UV light, which treats certain refractory types of psoriasis. And that's, again, where you have to weigh the risks and benefits of the treatment, you know, and how bad is the psoriasis, and the treatment could be causing a different type of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But also, anytime you do have chronic inflammation, that does increase your risk of having a cancer. So.
More, Bill?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Now, I got one person, George, on the phone, but I've got about 6 more minutes. So if you want to call, now's the time. But don't all call at once. 1-800-348-2555. But you don't know who else is out there. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Maybe we can fit you in. George in Stanford, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Alan. Doctor, you mentioned before the idea of having a colonoscopy at a certain interval. I believe it was 50. But I just want to report, and this is so important, I had a friend, a dear friend, an African-American male who was 40. He, in his 40s, he died of colon cancer, stage 4, it was discovered. Mm. And the doctors at that time said that African-Americans, I don't know if it applies to females because he was a male, but African-Americans should have colonoscopies starting earlier at 45. I don't know if it's a genetic thing, I guess, that's related to that particular race.
Mm-hmm. Currently the standard is age 50, you know, and I think we're still working out other details like that. How do we know based on a person's genetic background if they're at a higher risk? But I think you bring up a good point in that colon cancer is found earlier and earlier in people. You know, it's not as surprising anymore to see a 30 or 40-year-old patient with colon cancer. It's rare enough that we don't recommend screening everyone for it until age 50.
And what's the symptom?
There could be quite a few symptoms. Any new pain, any new blood in your stool, which, you know, it's hard because people who have hemorrhoids might have blood in their stool, too.
Absolutely.
So you don't want to get alarmed about that, but you want to know.
Are you saying you're unaware of generally a need for African Americans in particular to have earlier screenings than Caucasians, for example?
Right now, the standard is for everyone to start at age 50. But if there's any family history or any reason that you need to be screened earlier, you know, for example, if you had a family member who had cancer at 44, then we would recommend you start earlier than that age.
Okay. Thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551, although I don't think we're going to be able to take any more than are on the phone right now, but you never know. Let's go to Carol on Taconic Parkway. Carol, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I hope you can help me with my question because I don't have the written material in front of me. How do you pronounce it? Squamish or squamish?
Squamous cell cancer?
Yes. A friend of mine who's 77 recently had a pretty dramatic and somewhat traumatic surgical procedure for that. And I just read something about a non-invasive procedure where a chemical of some sort is introduced through a vein or on the surface. And mm-hmm. then I think it was heat is applied, which activates the chemical. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about this?
There's a couple treatments for topical treatments for skin cancer, and so I'm not quite sure which one that might be referring to, but it's not always a one-size-fits-all approach with squamous cell. You know, if there's aggressive features of it, then surgery would be the best just to remove it. But if it's a lower risk, then you have time to try other therapies first.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
They grow outward rather than downward, right?
Again, it depends. Squamous cell cancer is not always predictable. There's different types. So with that, there is a risk that it can become more aggressive.
Thank you, Carol. Okay, we're going to go to Tom in upstate New York. That's everything north of Yonkers, upstate New York. Go ahead. Go ahead, Tom. Hey, Tom. Whoa. Tom going once. Tom going twice. Hello, Tom. Tom gone. All right. Now we're going to go to John in Oneonta. John in Oneonta, and we will be able to take another call, I think. Go ahead, John.
Hello. My son has psoriasis, and I got some Chaga for him, Chaga, because it moderates the immune response, but I'm worried about it causing liver cancer. It's spelled Chaga. Mm-hmm. There's been some NIH and PubMed documents, studies on it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not quite sure about the risk of that and with developing liver cancer. Generally, a good rule is anything in moderation. Yep. But I'm not sure of the direct
risk.
That's why
my wife practices medicine, and she's not a doctor. Thank you. Thanks, John. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, we're going to Tom in upstate New York. Okay, Tom, your turn. Go ahead. Uh-oh. Tom, are you there? I don't know. Tom, are you there? Yeah, I hear you. I hear something over there. Tom? Hello. Hello, Tom. Bye, Tom. All right. I'm assured by Joe Makowitz that you were there, but not on my phone, you weren't. Okay, let's go to Frank in Schenectady. Frank in Schenectady, you're on.
Frank? Oh, thank you. My son has had a problem with squamous cells on his face. He was exposed to sun quite a bit when he was young. Mm-hmm. But he also had a mass removed from his leg, which turned out to be non-cancerous. And I wonder if there could be any connection. Does a mass having been removed, does it indicate any more vulnerability for problems later due to mm-hmm. the squamous cells or not?
You know, that might be that he just had two things that were very common. Do you have any more details about this mass and what it turned out to be?
The one on your leg. The one on
no,
the leg.
I'm sorry, mm-hmm. I don't.
Okay.
I really don't. I wish I had more to give you more to go on, but I don't.
Hard to say without knowing that, but probably not related because quite a few people have squamous cell cancers on their face.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, everybody, we're just about out of time. And my deep, deep apologies to those people left on. We've got to, let's see here, maybe we can just get one more in. Let's go to Amy in Amherst. Amy, can you give us a one-sentence question?
Yeah, I'm just curious about any alternative treatment other than Efodex for use on precancerous cells on your lips.
You know, and that's not something that I do routinely. That seems more like what a dermatologist would prescribe. I usually see people once they've been diagnosed with cancer.
Well, thank you, Amy. Appreciate that very much. We are about out of time. My apologies to those people who left on the line, a few, Dan and Frank. I want to thank Dr. Lindy Davis of Albany Medical Center for joining us today. You were terrific, Lindy.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Support for Medical Monday comes from WMC Heart and Vascular Institute with new diagnostic cardiology suites at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospitals, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMCHealth.org. Thanks to our wonderful engineer, Zach Malloy. He's got his hat on today, folks, and you know that he means business. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones. Our producer's Jim Lavoulis, but today, the amazing, wonderful Ray Graff. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Stay tuned now for a news update.